It's 9:28 and some seconds, and you've been listening to Counterspin on the stations of Coast Community Radio, KMUN 91.9 FM, Astoria, Oregon, KTCB 89.5 FM, Tillamook, Oregon, streaming at coastradio.org and on your mobile using the TuneIn app. It's 9:29 now, and I say it's close enough. Linda Perkins for Food Talk. I'm Marianne Myers, and Linda Perkins, my fabulous co-host, is here with me. Good morning.
Good morning. I got my apron on.
You do. In fact, you brought your apron, but you put it on before we pressed play.
Just before. It's one of those mornings.
We don't want to be fibbing about that apron
thing. No. So I was just thinking, if Moberg and Rust sponsors Counterspin, maybe we should be sponsored by Moberger and Rustic Bread.
Let's see if we can do that.
Yeah, I think that'd be good.
Let's work on that.
Okay, I won't talk anymore.
Oh, no, you have to talk. No. I'm going to ask you what you've been cooking.
Oh, my gosh. Well, I've been cooking a lot, but this is kind of embarrassing. Okay, so there is this thing in Wisconsin, Minnesota, called ham balls. Ham balls.
And it just sounds incredibly unappealing.
Oh, I know. And it's even worse than you think. So, but the thing is, they're so popular. And even there's churches that have ham ball dinners. And so I really thought that maybe it was me, because there's a lot of ground meat things that I just don't like. It's not like I'm not going to eat them if I'm at somebody's house, but like meatloaf, I'm not a meatloaf fan, and cabbage rolls, I don't want them, but other people really, really like them. So I made a batch of ham balls. Oh my gosh, they're so bad. So they're just so awful.
Now you're making us all want to make them. You know that. These are not croquettes.
No. So it's ham and ground pork and ground beef, and you make essentially a meatball. So, you know, there's, what do you call it? You know, egg and milk and the regular stuff. But the thing that is weird, like from Mars, maybe Jupiter, is there's graham cracker crumbs instead of breadcrumbs.
Oh,
I know. But still, I'm not making this up. Everybody back home is like, nummy, nummy ham balls. And I made them, and now I have lost so many friends. The dogs love me. There's a lot of ham balls for the dog. They're getting one a day.
So how do you cook them? Or do you?
Well, then it's in like a, you know, one of those Midwestern casserole tomato sauces, like, you know, tomato soup and vinegar.
And so you don't brown them first?
No.
You just simmer them in sauce.
And I'm sure that if they could be better, they would be better. But it's just the graham cracker crumbs, you know?
Yeah.
And then they look weird when you cut into them, because the ham is already a cook thing. Of course, the beef and the pork aren't. So the beef and the pork cook up like they do and look a meatball like. But then there's this ham, ground ham running through it that looks like raw meat. And like rivers of raw meat. And it's just weird. So, you know, you got to grind the ham. I got the meat grinder out, and it's part of my standing mixer, like an attachment, but I just couldn't get it in there quite right. And I think it's because I have had that grinder seriously at least 25 years. And I am embarrassed to say, but this is the first time I used it, but my machine is from about a year and a half ago. And so I'm sure that over time, like the specifications, you know, moved a quarter of a millimeter or something. So I just couldn't get it in there right. So I'd be grinding ham, and then all of a sudden the thing had like jerk loose and then fling ham everywhere, and the whole thing was just from start to finish awful. I mean, just bad.
Well, then this is serving as sort of a public service announcement to people, to, you know, if they see a recipe for handballs,
run,
they should continue scanning.
Yeah, the only person that liked them had four legs.
Well, there you go. Yeah. It sounds like a whole lot of work for a dog treat. So
yes, I'd
take a buy on it. Oh, it just sounds really truly disgusting.
Oh, I know. And I'm embarrassed because I don't know what is up with my brain. Like, maybe this is when you like to cook. This is the stage before Alzheimer's, when it's spring and there's all this lovely fresh stuff, and you're like, I'm going to make ham balls. You know, just, I don't know what it is.
Oh. Well, it's sort of like the old pickled bologna from Michigan, you know? I mean,
really?
Yes.
I've never heard of that.
Well, that's a thing. And we know this because the fabulous Pat Milliman used to be on Food Talk. Yeah. And she's from Michigan.
Okay.
And she introduced the upper left edge to the whole idea of pickled bologna.
Oh,
I think
my.
That's what it's called. Pickled bologna. Yeah. And then went home to visit family and actually brought some back in all the time saying how I know it sounds terrible, but it's really delicious. And it's in all the bars. Like when you go have a beer, I mean, it's there.
Yeah.
And she brought some home. And let us all try it. And it, as far as I'm concerned, is just really as awful as it sounds. So maybe it is that you have to be raised with it. Even though you grew up there, were not raised with it.
There are things like that. My brothers ate SpaghettiOs just constantly when they're little, and they still love SpaghettiOs. And I'm sure if they were introduced to them as an adult, you know, they probably wouldn't. But
yeah.
But I bet it's that kind of thing. I bet you're right. Same thing. It's got to be the same thing with ham balls.
I think a lot of... A lot of our attachment to certain foods is experiential and sort of sentimental.
Yeah, yeah.
In some way or another.
Hey, I figured out a new way to make potatoes, though. I did not figure it out. What I mean is I found a recipe. I'm not that smart. No, but it was really good. So I'm just going to try to redeem myself with this.
Okay.
So I brought the recipe. I got to get it out. It's from Food 52, which is a blog that I really like on the internet. So what you do, it's a way to roast potatoes in the oven. So what you do is you take red potatoes and, you know, cube them up. And then in a blender, you put half an onion, half a cup of oil, and a whole head of garlic, like a lot of garlic.
Yeah.
And then you grind it up and salt, pepper, a little paprika. And then you put that in a bowl, and then it's a slurry.
Uh-huh.
And then you... mix up the potatoes with that, put them on a sheet pan or two sheet pans. I put parchment down so that I could get them back up again.
And are you chunking up the potatoes or wedging them? Or
About an inch or like an inch dice. Whatever size potato you get, you know, quarter them or sixth them or whatever, so that they turn out to be about an inch. And then you roast them. It said 475, but I just didn't want to do it that high because I was using parchment and I was afraid that it would go aflame. So 450, I did my convection roast at 450, and they turned out really, really good. The title of the recipe on the Food 52 site is Better Than Restaurant Home Fries. And I think it's really true. They were really, really good. So it says to use red potatoes, 2 pounds of red. It says 2 pounds of red or yellow potatoes. So I had one of those bags with both of them in there, you know.
Yeah.
So I used half of each, and they were both really good. But left over, the red potatoes were significantly better than the yellow potatoes. Isn't that funny?
Yeah. Oh, but good to know.
Yeah, the red potatoes were still creamy and good when you heated them up, but the yellow potatoes were dense and dry.
Okay.
And so they really, really changed the next day.
So a good reason to use red potatoes.
Yeah, yeah. Anyway, it was really good, and it was different because it's like a vegetable slurry. And also, you'd think you would dive garlic, but you don't.
It sounds really good.
Yeah.
It sounds really good. I love roast potatoes in pretty much any old way, but that's a whole new one on me.
Yeah, yeah.
I love
it. It's worth trying it, and I don't know. It worked. It was really good.
Hey, I discovered something quite by accident.
What?
I'm sure I'm not the only one to have ever discovered it, but... I was pretty excited. You know how you're supposed to always read through the entire recipe before you start and then set your mise en place so everything you need is right there. You know how we do that, right?
You're on step 23 and you're like, I don't have molasses.
Exactly. And that's what happened to me.
Okay.
I was actually making the chicken pot pie for our fabulous donor who called in during pledge drive and chose as their thank you gift the chicken pot pie.
And you didn't have chicken.
No, I had chicken. What I didn't have at the last minute, and I was stunned to discover this, and the reason that I didn't look for it was because I was so convinced that it was there, was tomato paste.
Oh.
And I only needed a tablespoon and a half of tomato paste, and I usually buy tomato paste in the tubes because it keeps.
Mm-hmm.
And so...
And it's so handy.
Yeah, it's fabulous. And I was completely convinced that I had a half a tube in the door of the refrigerator, which of course I did not have. And in the process, I cleaned out my entire refrigerator looking for it. Did not find it and was like, ah, geez, because it's one of the very last steps.
Yeah.
It's like when you're making the roux
and
everything's already sauteed and the crust is ready to go. And anyway, I just really didn't want to go to the store. So I found a jar of sun-dried tomatoes from the dried kind, not the kind in oil. They were actually from the Moon River Farm Girls in Nehalem. I had gotten them over the summer or sometime. And I just had this mason jar full, and I took a handful and put them in the blender and blended them into a powder. And then added a little bit of water till they were a paste, and then called it tomato paste and stirred it in.
That's like science. That's brilliant.
It worked great, and it tasted fabulous. And I thought, well, you know, you could even do this with oil pack ones if you just kind of squeezed them out a little bit, and then you wouldn't have to add the water. They would make a paste when you whirred them up. But there you go.
That's brilliant.
I'm sure that's probably what... I don't even know how they make tomato paste, but that's a way.
Yeah.
So I was like, you know how sometimes necessity is the mother of invention and sometimes it's just a mother? And that was one of those ones where I was like, oh, come on. I'm going to like turn everything off and go to the store.
Oh, and then so often if I'm missing something, it's not like capers or something like that. It's butter or salt.
Yeah. Oh, gosh.
And you know, you just know you have salt and then suddenly you just don't have salt. And that's just the weirdest thing not to have.
Yeah.
And but both of those have happened to me recently.
Oh, no. Mm-hmm. Oh, and you're much farther from the store than I am.
Yeah. Saddle up the team. Oh, well, speaking of potatoes, were we?
Yep.
I often make twice baked potatoes, and I always make them out of russet potatoes, just the way that everybody makes them.
Oh,
but I made
Tom loves those.
Yeah, it is a guy thing, isn't it?
I never make them. I should.
You know what? It's all oval shaped things: deviled eggs, twice baked potatoes, all the oval shaped things guys really like.
Oh, there you go.
Yeah.
Good. Oh yeah, good rule of thumb.
But I wanted to try to make some out of Yukon Gold potatoes. I don't know why I just wanted to. I think I just wanted to see, because their skin is so much thinner.
Mm-hmm.
I just wanted to see if it would be easier or more pleasant to eat the whole thing and not through that skin, you know?
Yeah.
So I made some out of Yukon Gold potatoes, and I made them exactly how I did with russets, and it turned so gluey. Oh, it was the
weirdest
thing.
They're waxy, aren't they? Yeah.
Well, I looked it up on the internet, and you know how truthful that is. And
yes.
They said that they were a starchy potato, that they were defined as a starchy potato.
Oh, really?
Yeah, yeah.
Okay.
And, but I think it's wrong. They must be like maybe halfway between or something, but it was so gluey. Oh, it was so embarrassing. Because normally I don't do mashed potatoes in the mixer because you just don't want it to become gluey. But to get everything mixed with the twice baked potatoes, I do. And that is just a fine method with the russets, but not with the Yukon Gold. It was like spackle. It was like some kind of epoxy. It was like a non-Newtonian fluid. It was just really, really, really alarming. But I cooked them up and pretended that nothing happened.
Were they consumed?
I think so.
Oh.
I couldn't even watch.
Oh my gosh.
And I think that everybody who ate them were really polite.
Well, the Yukons have a fabulous flavor.
They are. They're delicious. And I really like them. And if it would have worked, I would have been really happy.
Yeah. And I do like Yukon Gold as mashed potatoes, but I have only ever mashed them with, you know, a hand masher. Mm-hmm. So they're just kind of more crushed than mashed.
And they are really good that way.
Yeah.
But nope. And I love making potato salad out of them and clam chowder, but this did not work.
Okay.
And it was funny because you trade the ang 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 of the skins of the russet to the ang 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 of the entire thing with the Yukons. Oopsie.
Well, it's how we find out. We try, and then we make something, and then we have our hapless diners eat it and see what happens.
And we just smile like, isn't this great? Because I don't want to make it again.
Oh, man. I have been liking Yukons for baked potatoes, though, for the very reason that you did that, because the skins, you can just eat the whole thing.
It's so much more pleasant. Yeah. And you can eat that russet skin. But
of course
it's just,
you can.
You got to work at it. It's a challenge.
You have to really want to.
Be motivated.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, a lot of sour cream and butter. You know, that helps.
Yeah.
I want to take a second to remind everybody that they're listening to Food Talk on Coast Community Radio, KMUN Astoria, KTCB in Tillamook, and that Food Talk is a co-production of Coast Community Radio and North Coast Food Web, which you can access at northcoastfoodweb.org. I'm Marianne Myers. I'm here with Linda Perkins, and we're talking about how to experiment, not always successfully, in the kitchen. You have notes.
Oh.
I find this alarming.
No, it's so much easier now that I don't have to wear those stupid glasses every week.
Oh, my God.
For those of you who may be our eighth listener and not the regular seven, so since the beginning of the year, I had this stupid pair of glasses that I bought off the internet. They're just fake glasses, so you can't. They don't have prescription lenses, but one side is square and the other side is round. And so every time I came to the studio right before the show, I would switch glasses and I was wearing them. Well, I thought I was playing a joke on Marianne, and we're just sitting right across the desk and she never said anything. So I assume she never noticed. But the truth is, she's a very, very nice person. And they were so stupid looking that she didn't say anything. So finally, when it came to be March and we had the pledge drive, I can't see out of those glasses. And I bring notes so that I can remember what I cooked, you know, and I can be maybe halfway, one quarter, one eighth interesting, as opposed to just saying, "Huh, Marianne, how are you?" And so, but I'd have to write the notes like in Sharpie in 4-inch high letters so I could see them through these stupid glasses. It was so funny. Anyway, so finally for the pledge drive, we made one of the
thank you gift, a premium,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, premiums. Be that if you pledged a certain amount, I would tell you the joke I'd been playing on Marianne for the last 3 months. But it turned out she had noticed the glasses right away, like 5 minutes after the first time I wore them, and just never said anything.
I didn't think they were ridiculous. I thought that they were ultra cool.
Oh.
I did. I just was like, if I had seen those frames last time I got glasses, I would have chosen them.
The joke was on me.
Oh, man.
But anyway, it's so much easier to see now that I can wear actual glasses. So I wrote down what I baked this year. Oh, my gosh, what I made this past 2 weeks.
Yeah.
One thing that that I really like, and I've probably said it before here, is just plain old seasoned rice vinegar on vegetables.
It's very good.
It's just the simplest thing, and then and you don't need oil. And my favorite thing to do is just slice up a cucumber. You can do it in ribbons, or you can do it in little rounds, and then just hit it with a few dashes of seasoned rice vinegar. The seasoned rice vinegar is rice vinegar with sugar and salt in it. That's all. And then it's just really good, especially with some red onion. It's really, really good.
It's really good.
A super simple thing, and it's good.
And that a forkful of that on a corned beef sandwich is just so good.
Yeah. Pulled pork, too.
Yeah. Anything.
Yeah, anything. Cheerios.
There you go.
Just kidding.
Hold the milk. Please. Well, you have been baking for fun, for family, for an event. What?
Well, I actually have cue the Halloween scary music, 2 bake sales on the same day coming up in May. So, and I've never had that before. So they're both pretty large. One is for the Humane Society over in Pacific County. They're a really good group of people.
They are a fabulous animal shelter. I like them. And I have 2 pets in my house right now from them.
Oh, yeah. Yes. I really, really like them. So one is for them. And the other one is for the Southwester Garden Club.
Uh-huh.
They raise money for scholarships. They give scholarships to people that are kind of like horticultural related, which makes sense. You know,
yes.
Nature, farming, horticulture. Animals, that kind of thing. Anyway, for scholarships. So 2 fairly big bake sales, and I'm a little nervous about
that. Is
that
part of the Spring Into Gardening, then, event that they do every year for the...
Yes.
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 So that's a biggie.
Yes.
That's the fairgrounds.
Yeah.
Yipes. So...
Oh, I don't know if it's the fairgrounds. No, I think it's down in Seaside.
Okay, it's a club. Yeah. It's for the club, not for the whole
shebang.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah, I think there's something different at the fairgrounds.
All right.
Yeah,
well, we'll have to let people know exactly when that's...
No, I don't want them... I don't want that. I want sympathy. I want pity. I want you to say, "They're there when you see me on the street, all 7 of you." Poor Linda. Not poor Dale. Poor Linda.
What are you baking?
Well, I'm doing a lot of stuff that freezes really well, just because I am nervous. So things like banana bread, zucchini bread, quick breads freeze really well.
Yes.
You know, lemon poppy seed bread. And brownies freeze absolutely perfectly. I can freeze pies before I bake them. You can freeze them after too, but I'm freezing them before I bake them. And then like fruit crisps, I have the fruit in the pan all ready to go, and I just put topping and throw that in the oven. Uh-huh. And so I'm just trying to be organized about it. That's what I'm trying to do.
You can even do tons of crisp topping and freeze the topping separately. Yep. And then just, yeah.
Got it.
That, yeah, right. Done it. I actually think from a bake sale shopper perspective, being able to buy frozen quick breads already frozen is fabulous, because having those in the freezer,
yeah,
you might think about keeping a few in a cooler
for
people.
I didn't think about that.
Because it's really a great thing to have, okay, in the freezer for, yeah, you know, surprise, nasty, yeah, surprises.
Yeah,
you
but
need
it's
something.
True, nasty surprises. You yeah, want, I mean, that's a way to show people you love them, to,
yeah,
bring them something you or somebody else has baked.
Hey, if it's home baked and it's out of the freezer, it hardly matters whose oven it came out of. Yeah, you know what, yeah, I mean? Although I guess that would imply that all baked goods are created equal. And we know that's not exactly true. Mm-hmm. But, okay, two bake sales. I don't know how that happened or why you said that. Do you need an intervention?
No, I need a calendar. Sure.
May. It's all 1 month.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh my gosh.
I think it'll be okay. But I just this week came to the realization that because they were both on the 26th, that was the same day. And so I was just scared.
Yeah. I really don't even blame you. Yeah. Although both very worthy causes, and so good for you.
It'll be fun.
It'll be fun. I want to remind people that there is a recipe page at northcoastfoodweb.org. If you're interested in, we try to get the things that we've been talking about up there on the food, on the recipe page, or maybe just a link. So we might post a link to the blog.
Potatoes?
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah, so that they could find that.
Yeah, it's good. You know, they have a contest all the time on that that blog, Food 52, and it's different every month. Like, I think this month it was, what can you do with bananas and plantains? But because it's all their readers, the people that read the blog, that submit entries, you just get people's best recipes from all over. And I really, really enjoy that. For instance, the winner this month, what she made was not a pineapple upside down cake, but a banana upside down cake. And I thought that was brilliant. I never thought of doing anything besides pineapple in a pineapple upside down cake. But you,
yeah,
know how bananas foster, you caramelize,
yeah,
the bananas, and it's so good,
it's,
you know?
So good.
And I thought, that's a really good idea.
Yeah, that's a great idea. And you know, something interesting about plantains that I did not know. I was eavesdropping at kids' cooking camp over spring break at the Food Web, and this particular kids' camp, which is a 5-day thing, they were cooking from a different country every day.
Oh, wow.
And one of the days was Puerto Rico. And this is very bad that I don't remember the actual appropriate name of this dish. But what it was plantains sliced into slabs.
Okay.
And layered like lasagna.
Oh, really?
Only instead of the pasta, it was plantains and then all of this wonderful filling and then another layer and another layer and cheese. And it was really good.
Wow.
Really, really, really good.
So,
because
it's starchy.
Not all, yeah, exactly.
So it'd be sort of like a cross between lasagna and shepherd's pie.
Kind of.
No, it sounds good.
Well, yeah, except you know, with shepherd's pie, you kind of scoop it out, right?
Yeah, yeah.
And this was, you could actually cut a square of it because it was more like lasagna in that way that it baked into a. But it was just really delicious and something I had not ever had before. I count on my Costa Rican and Puerto Rican friends to set me up with tostones and the sautéed sweet plantains, mm-hmm, that get all caramely, kind of all by themselves. So fabulous. Just so incredibly good. But I hadn't had it used that way before, and it was really very good.
I want to try it.
Yeah, I will endeavor to get the name of that. And I'll ask, if it's not already up there, I'll ask the fabulous Wendy D'Agostino, who is our kitchen coordinator, to put that on the recipe page, because that was a good one. And
yeah,
we have access to plantains now, so
yeah,
there's no reason not to be eating them. They're fabulous.
I was thinking just about that, how these recipes from 50, 60, 70 years ago, like ham balls, you know, just have all those weird ingredients and just that thing about how I was embarrassed that it's spring and I'm making ham balls. And we do, we just have so much that's available to us that wasn't that long ago, you know, plantains are one of them. And it really changes how we cook compared to when I look at my grandma's notes, you know, or her notebooks of recipes. Yeah. It's all Jello and cream of mushroom soup. And
Yes. It's really interesting. And that was very new wave in their time. Yeah. I mean, seriously new wave. I'm pretty glad we got over that, though, really, actually.
Yeah.
I don't miss it all that much, although I do like to see it in my grandmother's handwriting.
Yeah. Yes, that's very sentimental.
But why are we so mean to ham? You know, leftover ham, I mean...
Why are we so mean to ham?
It made me think of deviled ham, which is just really like, why? Yeah. If you want a ham sandwich, have ham.
Yeah.
Why would you, like, grind it up?
I want more calories. I'm going to put mayo in this, too.
And relish. It's not tuna, stop. And I don't know about, I'm not big on croquettes. And I've had croquettes in like Pennsylvania Dutch country where they do croquettes really well, but I'm not going for it. I just, you know, they just don't do it for me. It's like, just eat the ham then.
Yeah.
I don't get it. But it is a big old chunk of meat.
Do you like country ham? That southern thing that's... Not good.
Gosh,
I guess
not.
How I feel.
Well, I don't exactly know what country ham is, I guess.
It's some weird not ham tasting thing. I don't like it.
You mean like Spam?
No, it's a different way to cure ham.
Oh, okay.
And
it's maybe like instead of smoked, it's some other
thing? Well, I was actually just thinking about it because I think I tried it once about 20, 25 years ago and I didn't like it and I've never tried it since. And
yeah.
I just remember going, ew, and that was it. And I don't have a memory of much else except that it wasn't... It didn't taste like ham, though it was that same piece of meat. And I don't know what they do different. I wondered if you did. But
no.
It's a very deep South thing.
I think it's a very deep secret. I have no idea what it is. I have no idea. And I gotta
Maybe other people think the same, because if it was truly delicious, I mean, it would be everywhere.
Yeah.
It might be a ham ball kind of thing.
It might be a ham ball kind of thing. And now we got a whole nother kind of thing we can talk about now. It's a ham ball kind of thing. I realize in talking about it, because I know that at Easter or big holidays, people often do a ham instead of a turkey or whatever.
I did this year.
Did you?
Mm-hmm.
I'm just not big on ham in that way. I love like grilled ham and cheese where it's just thin sliced, really nice smoked ham. I don't know what Black Forest ham is, but it's got like that black weird thing on the outside. I'm not sure what that is, so I just want the regular ham.
I like it in soup.
Oh, yeah,
I like
definitely.
Split pea soup.
And I like it in scalloped potatoes.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And I like it in a scramble or, you know, with breakfast. So I do not want to malign ham across the board. I just think that we have done a lot of... unconscionable things to ham.
I made some scalloped potatoes with ham recently. I really did.
Really?
In the last 2 weeks, I swear that I'm not making that up, just trying to be your friend because you mentioned it. So what I did, though, I'm actually pretty happy with, because I would always in the past slice the potatoes to try to make them real pretty looking, you know?
Yeah.
But I just quartered them up and put them through the food processor. And here's what happened. They came out thinner. And so they cooked faster, and I think they cooked better, and I think the whole thing melded together better.
You just used a slicing blade on your food processor.
Yes. So what I did was I sliced up the amount of potatoes that the recipe said to, and then this was, it had a lot of cream, and I put the cream in a big honking pot, and then got it simmering, put the potatoes in, and I just got the whole thing hot. And so the potatoes are very misshapen, but they're all very thin, and they're not very big because they got to fit in that chute, you know?
Right.
And I poured the whole thing in a pan and I smashed it down so that there wasn't any airspace in there, and put a little cheese on top. And it turned out really good because a lot of times when you make a whole pan of it, sometimes I'll even just do them in bread pans so that you don't have to wait for the center to get done, you know. But it got done a lot more evenly and a lot faster. And I think it's because the potatoes were hot when they went in the pan. And then also because they were so thin, they cook so fast.
That's really a good idea because it is hard to slice them thin enough with a knife. At least it is for me.
And it takes a long time.
Yeah, the potatoes start turning color by the time you're through if you're doing
a pretty one.
Yeah, and if you're doing a pretty good size pan of them.
Yeah.
That's a really good idea, and I like the idea of Ina Garten does that with one of her, I can't even remember, some sort of gratin. Oh, I think she does a fennel and something, gratin.
Okay.
Anyway, where you prep all the veg, and then you make the bechamel, mm-hmm. and then you put it all in a bowl and stir it all up until everything's really coated.
Yeah.
And then put it in the pan and bake it off. And I think that's a better way. I grew up making, watching and learning to make scalloped potatoes by pouring the bechamel over the top of everything after you had it all layered with a little butter pats
this
and salt
worked
and pepper.
Better. Also, it wasn't really a bechamel. It was pretty much just cream. I'm going to have to remember next week. But the starch from the potatoes is what made it thick.
Wow.
It was good. It was a lot creamier and not goopy. I liked it a lot.
All right. It's time for us to go. And you've been listening to Spuds R Us here on Food Talk.
Moberg and Russet Potato.
This is Coast Community Radio, KMUN 91.9 FM, Astoria, Oregon, KTCB 89.5 FM, Tillamook, Oregon, streaming at coastradio.org, on your mobile using the TuneIn app.